Greg Cangelosi likes to sport a baseball cap bearing the words, "Never Stop." That's his hashtag and his motto, and he certainly seems to live it as a tech entrepreneur and investor in startups. Cangelosi sold his first company, Blue Sky Factory, an email marketing provider, in 2011. But he kept right on moving. Today, he is the 40-year-old CEO of MissionTix, an online event ticketing platform. He's co-founder of Betamore, a Baltimore-based campus for technology and entrepreneurship. And he's a managing member of the Baltimore Angels Investment Group, always looking for promising startups. Greg Cangelosi joins us on Midday to talk about his ventures and others emerging in Baltimore's growing tech scene. First, the news from NPR. And welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks for joining us for the second hour of our show today. Greg Cangelosi is on a mission, a self-proclaimed serial entrepreneur whose personal motto is "Never Stop." That's his hashtag. Those are the words on his baseball cap. He wants to make Baltimore a hotbed of technological innovation. After selling his email marketing company, the Blue Sky Factory, in 2011, Greg went on to co-found Betamore, the Federal Hill-based campus intended to foster local entrepreneurial efforts. He's also the co-founder of the Baltimore Angels, which you'll hear about in this hour of the show. It's a group of venture capitalists who fund local startup companies. Recently, Greg Cangelosi took on the role of CEO of Baltimore-based MissionTix. That's an online event ticketing company that we'll talk about in this hour with Greg as well. This position has brought Greg's total job total to, let me see, at least three. Hashtag never stop. Nice to see you, Greg. Thanks for being here today.
Great to see you, Dan. Thanks for having me.
We're going to do a little bit of catching up with you.
Sure. Yeah.
I want to go back to, well, not to your childhood, but I guess maybe we could, but at least to Blue Sky Factory and how you got involved in, this field of how you became a techie.
Yeah. It's quite the twisty story.
Yeah, let's do a little bit of that, would you? I know you went to UMBC. You came to Maryland to attend a really good school, University of Maryland, Baltimore County. What were your plans when you arrived there?
Amazing school. Believe it or not, contrary to totally, popular belief, I actually was I've been an emergency medical technician since I was 16 years old, and I thought that's what I wanted to do.
Would you volunteer as a teenager?
I was the guy, in high school, getting out of class when the beeper went off because I was closest to the first aid call. And I thought that's what I wanted to do. I rode on ambulances for, 2-3 years.
With a volunteer fire company
squad,
in New Jersey?
Up in New Jersey, yeah, exactly. Huh. And so when I was, looking at my college career, I was like, let's look at the colleges and universities that have programs around this. And UMBC, a lot of people don't know this, has one of the best programs in the country. And so that's how I got to Maryland originally.
Okay.
Moved here.
But you switched tracks there at some point.
Got halfway through the program, and I was like, wait a second. Hang on a second here. I don't really want to do this for a living.
Well, what interested you in college then, if it wasn't that?
I think it was in college in general. I do value the importance of secondary education, and I wanted to go to college, and I feel strongly about it. I think it's important. I know it's under a lot of criticism these days in terms of just spitting out people in debt and whatnot. But
what
for
I
me,
meant was if you were found that you weren't interested in emergency medicine.
Oh, I pivoted
as a career. Yeah, you pivoted.
I pivoted. Yeah.
So where did you pivot?
English, believe it or not. Yeah, and based on the real simple fact that I didn't really know what I wanted to do at this point, and I figured no matter what I did in my life, I needed to read and write really well and be able to communicate effectively.
Okay.
And so it's turned out that English degree has really helped me out a lot.
So you're 40 years old, and we're talking about 20 years ago then, right?
Man.
Yeah, man, time flies, right?
Yeah.
So 20 years ago, did we have smartphones in our hands? I don't think so.
We did not have smartphones in our
hands. A lot of people didn't have computers then 20 years ago, really.
I had one of the big, bulky AT&T cell phones.
I had a bag phone in the car.
Yeah, the one with the big box and the big antenna on
it. So,
you were an early adopter.
Yeah. So 20 years ago, no, it wasn't even there. I didn't get a computer until.
Here, I'll tell you.
Well, I had a Radio Shack computer from the 80s. I didn't get a PC. I didn't get a Mac. Not a Mac, but a what's the other one? The other big company, Bill Gates.
Microsoft PCs, Dells. Yeah.
Right. I didn't get one of those until 95 or something like that, 96.
You know what's interesting? When I was at UMBC, you know, this was the point where in time where the internet was really just becoming mainstream. You know, Netscape 1.0 was online.
Right.
You know, Mozilla. We were checking our email on command prompt lines in the Silicon Graphics Computer Science Lab at UMBC. This was the time where I never forget, one of my fraternity brothers came over to my house off campus and handed me a five and a quarter inch disc and said, "This is going to change your life." And he installed it, and it allowed the 286 computer that I had, that I bought off my friend in high school, to connect to the computer, the university's mainframe, and start surfing the web at home at Netscape, on Netscape 1.0. And it was, I used to sit there and just hyperlink to hyperlink. And that was the internet.
And you were doing wow.
Wow.
The whole thing was a wow.
And you just get, you go way deep down the rabbit hole.
And that, like, it wasn't gonna, that long ago, really, when
really
you think
wasn't.
About it. Boy, we've been at warp speed here with technology. So when you came out of college, what did you do right away in college? Did you do anything in tech, or did you go somewhere else?
You know, I didn't. I have a very, very deep passion and love for music. I was on the student events board all throughout my days at UMBC, very active in, you know, student programming. I was also the tech crew manager for the University Center, so I did everything audio, visual. I've listened to Freeman Hrabowski speak a million times. I used to sit in the booth and make sure that never was any gain on his mic or any feedback. So I've heard him speak a ton of times, and it's always inspirational. But
anyway,
I fell in this love for like live events and music. And having done it at a school, that's when I realized that I was an entrepreneur, because unlike most of my other fellow graduates, after commencement, I just went out and started a company. It was called Missing Link Media Productions, and it was a concert promoting firm. I used to do shows all over, from clubs like the 8x10 to used to be called the Record Theater, Lithuanian Hall in Sowebo, shows at UMBC. I used to co-promote shows. There used to be a club that's now called the Auto Bar, called Club Midnight. I mean, I was doing shows all over, and it was a really interesting experience, and actually I think it's one that really helped me develop thick skin for entrepreneurship, because it was often that sometimes I had the most expensive ticket in the audience when I would actually go out and have to pay these bands to come through. I was taking all the risks. So it taught me to be a risk taker.
Mm-hmm.
And it taught me, a good friend of mine who was a concert promoter said, "Hey, if you want to be a concert promoter, take $10,000 and burn it in a trash can in front of you and be okay with it." And I learned that lesson. It's a cutthroat business. You make money one day, you lose it the next. You make it, and I wasn't capitalized, so I learned sort of how to bootstrap my way through things.
When did you feel you were a success at that?
Actually never felt like I was a success at that. I kind of chalked the whole thing up to learning a lot about what's important in business. I also learned that's how I developed my hustle. And every good entrepreneur has a hustle, right? I mean, it was my job to get those people to buy tickets to go see the shows that I was taking the risk on, right? So I was the guy putting those damn flyers under your windshield and all that kind of stuff.
Windshield wipers.
Yeah, right. And then, you know, hiring other people to send out and promote things. I learned all my early chops on how to build an email list. I learned from my technology chops at UMBC, learning how to program basic HTML to build a website and hold up an online calendar, real early days and stuff. But it was a foundation for some of my success with the internet.
You know, it's interesting. You're reflecting on this now. But
yeah.
I wonder if when you were in the midst of it, you understood that you were having a learning experience.
Yeah, probably not. No.
Probably,
because I was just sweating money all the time.
Yeah,
you know,
probably worried about it. And had it been successful, you think you would have continued as a concert promoter? Have you made a lot of money from it?
You know, so, you know, I hate to use the word again, pivot, but, you know, just kind of like, it was a lot of late nights, a lot of losing money, making money here and there, but no consistency. So at this point, I was 2 years out of school. I never had what would be considered a regular paycheck. I mean, it literally just like on this float, make it, lose it, somehow make it. Through the days, but I really started developing a fondness for the internet and the email marketing side of it and the website development of it. And that was really back in, you know, 99. So most people didn't have websites yet or were building websites. So I to use the word again, pivot, I took my concert promoting firm and just literally turned it into a web development business. And I was being mentored by another gentleman who was helping me sort of think through how to sell websites and whatnot. And this was the early days of the Emerging Technology Center over in Canton, when it was at the Can Company,
mm-hmm.
like the year it opened. It was like the real, you know, it was very shiny and very new. And his company was called Zero to 80. And he, I think at some point he realized he was kind of grooming a potential competitor. And he offered me a job. He said, why don't you just come join? And so it was a crazy, wild ride in 99.
Did you still feel like an entrepreneur, even though you took that job? Your instinct was to work for yourself?
My instinct was to work for myself, always. And it always really has been. Really just because I think in life I just wanted to develop that ultimate freedom.
I want to ask you about that. Yeah. Because some people listening to this, at least my thought is, there are people who will start a business, and then there are people who will work for people who start a business.
Sure.
And the world is kind of divided that way. And you either have that or you don't.
Yep.
Like, I look at people in sales, for instance. I think it really takes some special person to go out and try to sell something, mm-hmm. a salesman. And I don't think I'd be particularly good at that.
Right.
And I think the world is kind of divided with people who can do that and others who can't. Leaders and followers.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
What about the entrepreneur? Is that something you can learn, something you can develop?
It's interesting.
Or do you just have to have it in you to say, that's what I want to do?
There's always that question. I mean, I find that the entrepreneurs that I see who are successful and the ones that kind of do it repeatedly or have started many companies, sold a couple, have some going, it's sort of like this innate thing that you're born with. I don't know if that's necessarily the case. I also think it's kind of an offshoot of your upbringing. I grew up, my parents told me that I could do anything and be anything I wanted. My dad worked on Wall Street for 30 years. He had a subscription to Entrepreneur magazine. Guess what? I read every single edition of that magazine from front to back cover. And so maybe just in my mind growing up, absorbing that information over the time just made me want to go out and sort of, be the master of my own domain and kind of pave my own way in life.
Blue Sky Factory.
Yeah.
So tell us about that. How did you get from the job in the can company to Blue Sky Factory?
Well, to answer your question, although I was working for somebody, I did feel like an entrepreneur because it was that really heady time of like the .com, blow up really. Mm-hmm. 99, 2000 is the time frame we're talking about here. So I was the second employee at Zero to 80. It was me and a designer in a room. And I remember the CEO just came back and he had sold a $300,000 website. And, of course, the first question is, woo, great. Now, how are we going to get it done? We have like, I don't program or anything like that. So long story short, I spent 12 months there and I think I did every single job. I hired people. I fired people. I sold. I account managed. I art directed. I did finance. I managed a team of software developers. I mean, I got an invaluable education on what it's like to run a startup. And it went very quickly. I mean, there was two of us. 6 months later, there were 25 people.
Did you come up with a website for that $300,000 contract?
We did, yep, and we got the job done. I'm not going to say it was pretty. The process wasn't pretty, but the end result got, the client got what they needed.
And again, being reflective about that, a learning experience because you did so many different things.
Huge.
Yeah. So Blue Sky comes next?
So Blue Sky came next. I left that company in February 2001. It was things were starting to look pretty sour. And I was being recruited by another company in Philadelphia, and it was an amazing opportunity for me. I was 26 years old. They were throwing like a $90,000 base at me, equity, bonuses, the whole nine yards. And so the day I left, my co-founder of Blue Sky, we all left kind of together. And before I took the position, he said, we just did like $1 million in sales at this company, and you brought in a big chunk of the revenue.
Blue Sky Factory.
At Zero to 80.
At Zero to 80.
And so his kind of basic thesis was, why don't we do this for ourselves instead of, and so we sat on it, thought about it a little bit. Again, single, young guy. I'm like, I could take this nice, cushy, big salary job, have some really good responsibilities, get equity in a really hot startup, or I can go try to, march to the beat of my own drum and pave my own way. And so the decision was made, and it turned out to me, when I think back and I tell the story, especially to students, that it was like the ultimate decision. It was the ultimate sort of believe in yourself moment.
And the idea was email marketing, providing services to companies that wanted to market through email.
Yes.
Right?
Originally, it was a lot of everything, and that's where I learned the skill of focus, which is a hard one for entrepreneurs. But we were so scrappy. We didn't have investors. We couldn't raise a dollar of investment, even if we wanted to.
This was after .com,
right? At one point, I was shopping around. 5% of the company for $25,000 just to keep us going. Nobody bid on that deal. Turned out in the long run, it would have been a good one. But back in the day, of course not. But yeah, so we were doing websites and all this kind of stuff. We did a big project for the city of Baltimore, a big database project for locating real estate and mapping out real estate. But, you know, we kind of got in and we got a big check from the city and the sales were so tough. You know, we hired six people and, you know, 4 months later, we had to lay everybody off. And you get that experience of having to tell people they don't longer have a job after you sold them into a vision of coming to work for you. And then we kind of got it back to the roots again. It was just my co-founder, Richard, and I, and we were just back in the office. We were over at Tide Point. Bill Struver was a huge fan of ours, so he hooked us up with some space that we definitely obviously could not have afforded on the retail side. So we said, what's the one thing we're really good at and that we should focus on? Let's just focus on one thing that no one else is doing in town. And it turned out to be email marketing, which was a very early sort of niche marketing medium.
That was Blue Sky Factory that you had until 2011 and sold.
Yes.
Greg Cangelosi, we're going to stop there. We'll pick up after a short break. We have to take a short break, our first break of the hour, or the second hour of midday today. Greg Cangelosi, our guest, serial entrepreneur, now CEO of Mission Ticks. He'll tell us about that company when we get back, and also about the technology scene in Baltimore. If you have any questions or comments for Greg as we go along here in this hour, 410-662-8780. Welcome back to Midday and our conversation with Greg Cangelosi. We left off at Blue Sky Factory getting started in, 1999, 2000?
2001.
2001, okay.
And I ran it for 10 years, bootstrapped, ran it for 10 years.
And then you decided, well, you got a good offer, I guess, in 2011 to sell it.
Yes, I did.
Now, during that time, had you tried any other ventures, or did you just focus on that one thing?
Focus.
Like Curly and City Slickers. You just do that one thing.
Email marketing, and we did email marketing really well. And then, you know, towards the end, you know, the company's, you know, is now called What Counts. I still sit on the board of directors. It's great to see the company move on. They still use the product, all that kind of stuff. But we started getting into some social stuff. Social media was certainly, sort of bubbling there towards the end. But it was always just focus on email. It was about product.
You know, there's also a story in there about believing in the future of this, of technology and the internet post.com.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes they say, you know, the best time to start a company is at a recession, you know, because you just get the kind of build up back up, which is exactly what we got. And we wound up doing it without ever taking any investment money, which is crazy. I've invested in a lot of companies, but I've never raised a dollar of money for my own ventures.
Greg, tell us about Mission Ticks, MISSION, capital TIX.
Mission Ticks.
Online ticketing for events. You would love events. So you went towards something that you personally love, and how is this different than, you know, the big T, Ticketmaster, and all
TM
that?
Well, you know what? We're at a very exciting point at Mission Ticks. We're getting ready to relaunch an entirely new ticketing platform that allows event sellers of all sizes, from venues to festivals down to small mom-and-pop venues, or just one-off events, to put their events on sale on a totally responsive web platform, and it'll work across any device, give them a whole full suite of marketing tools, email, social, mobile. We're building out an ad network that will do display ads for them. The whole thing about being an event seller is you want to sell more tickets. And so the fundamental question is, why should I put my tickets on sale with Mission Ticks versus, you know, one of the others? Mm-hmm. And so it's our job to provide innovative marketing solutions to help them push their ticket sales, essentially, all the way through following through with the ticket sale, through the production of the event. We run the gates at large festivals. We got a bunch of great stuff that's just coming out, being announced, like the Shindig, the Charm City Bluegrass and Folk Festival. The Hot August Music Festival was just announced. So we'll go out and we'll run all that and provide a layer of service for our clients as well. On the flip side of that, you know, the goal of Mission Ticks now for us is to create the best consumer experience. We all know that everyone hates fees, right? Turns out ours are actually pretty low compared to the rest of the market. But so we're trying to, you know, it's, what's interesting about this company for me as an entrepreneur is my last business was pure B2B, business to business. We sold to businesses. But in this company, we do sell to businesses, but we also deal with the consumers. So it's a B2B and a B2C play, which is really challenging because you've got to figure out sort of where to focus, and it's hard to focus both at the same time. But that said, we're doing that. And it's just, you know, it takes time.
So your clients are businesses or nonprofits that are trying to sell events. They're trying to sell tickets to events,
you
right?
You got it, yep.
But you also have to be aware of what the consumer part of this, right?
Yeah, like what's the purchasing like? How much, you know, how much marketing, how many marketing messages do they get? You know, can I get my tickets delivered to me mobily? And then we're really kind of going to differentiate ourselves from the rest of the pack is what you can do once you get to an event, something we're calling in-event experience. So we're looking at a really a bunch of really cool innovative solutions to really, if you think about it, the ticketing vendor, the ticketing vendor's job is sort of over once the ticket gets redeemed at the gate, right? And so we're kind of thinking about it as like, could that still, you know, can that be the beginning of the experience at the event? I mean, you think about it, there's a lot there. So we're really starting to get into experiences now.
Well, you just took on this role of CEO. What's been your involvement in Mission Ticks prior to this? Any?
First of all,
we need the background.
I'm like totally psyched to be working with a great team. Joe Laverty, Todd Harvey are the co-founders. It's an affiliate company to Mission Media, which is a full service agency in town that does print, branding, identity, interactive work, and a whole bunch of other great stuff. The company spun out because the Auto Bar was looking for a ticketing solution. And so the tech team at Mission Media built it. At the same time, at this time, I'm running Blue Sky. Mission Ticks, by the way, is 13 years old. It's great because we're now going back to being a startup, which I love that. It's easier said than done, but we're getting there, we're making progress. The Auto Bar, we built this system for them and then just sort of launched it. And to the point where it was starting to really take on a lot of Mission Media's resources. So Joe and Todd decided to spin it out. Mission Media and Mission Ticks became a client of Blue Sky Factories. And we started to power all of their email marketing on behalf of their clients, which they have a large book of clients that they do this for. And somewhere down the line, I went to Joe with Mission Ticks and I said, we should package up this email social platform that we have with your ticketing platform and go out and get some big events. And we were successful. We got the All Good Music Festival together, which was really big. We did do the last Grand Prix in the city, which by far was our largest event. We ran 9 box offices in the city. We had a staff of over 80 people. We had like 40 point of sale systems. We have self-service kiosks, crazy stuff. But to answer your question, so I was always affiliated on a client-vendor relationship. Of course, I've known Joe and Todd for many years as well. And, you know, after I sold Blue Sky, I did a lot of work in between, you know, selling Blue Sky and starting at Mission Ticks, which hopefully we can talk about. But they basically said, "Hey, look, if you ever want to do never want to swing the bat again or do another round, open door." So
you've become CEO.
So I've become CEO.
Now it's interesting to me when we talk about entrepreneurship and Mission Ticks in your description of what it became, how it developed, how it evolved.
Yeah,
right?
It's cool.
Okay, so. What I would always worry about in being an entrepreneur or starting up something is that is my idea different than what's already there? I want to compete with another company that's already been doing this for a long time. How am I going to do it differently? How am I going to impress anybody other than, you know, maybe offering it at a lower fee because people are always looking to save money on things, right? I mean, maybe that in itself is a good enough idea, but in terms of distinguishing yourself from some other entity that's already providing this service, that's what I would worry about, that I go to you or the Baltimore Angels for some startup capital, and they'd say, well, you know, what are you doing that's different, really? How are you going to improve this for the consumer in any way? How are you going to make money?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, what's wild about the ticketing industry is it reminds me very much about the email marketing space, you know, and I often talk to Joe and my partners about this a lot. It's like those are fragmented industries. There's a lot of companies that sell tickets online. There's a lot of companies that sell email marketing services online. And like you said, you get the pricing pressure, right? And so how do you differentiate? And, you know, my take on that is by product innovation and changing and rethinking the way, you know, industries are sort of commonly run. You know, so right now we're really like rethinking the ticketing industry from our perspective outside of, yeah, sure, we have to get all the, you know, nuts and bolts of, you know, being a player to be a player. We need the marketing tools. We need mobile delivery. We need this. We need that. We need to have a great consumer experience. But it's coming up with and rethinking different ways and different tools to give the consumers while they're at events, to give the event sellers different tools and analytics about their customers and different ways to see the analytics of their events. You know, there's just a lot of different ways of rethinking it. You know, one of the things that we're going to be doing a big push on is cashless commerce, you know. So, for example, we do the Maryland State Fair. We've been doing that for a couple of years. Imagine being able to go to the fair and get a card that you bought in advance that has all your carnival rides and ticketing rides, and it's a really simple, easy POS.
That sounds convenient. That sounds great. Don't need any cash.
You go to another refilling station and you refill your card up, you know, and then the event.
Have you done that already?
No, not yet. We're working on that.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, if we're really lucky, we'll have it by this year's state fair. Our goal is to launch it by, you know, this year.
The other thing that strikes me about Mission Ticks is that it's for anybody, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
If you have a bull roast in Parkville for whatever group it is, and you want to get out there a little further, sell more tickets, maybe you could use this service.
Yep.
So you're tapping into a consumer market that the big ticketing companies haven't touched. Is that part of the
absolutely, thinking? Absolutely, yeah. That, or what we'll call the long tail of event producers. You know what I mean? It's free to use for free events. Fees only kick in once you put an event on sale. But we don't bias at all with our clients.
Greg Cangelosi, our guest in this hour of Midday. You're welcome to call with a comment or question. 410-662-8780 is our phone number for Midday. Toll free long distance, 866-661-9309. The Midday email address is midday@wypr.org. If you want to use the email, but you can also tweet us at @MiddayWYPR if you have a question or comment for Greg. And if you have questions about being an entrepreneur, about being a startup, maybe you have entrepreneurial instincts and you have a question for Greg, which gets me to the Baltimore Angels.
Sure, yeah.
Tell us about this. A group of venture capitalists are looking for a particular type of startup?
It's a group. It's not VCs. A couple of the group members are venture capitalists, but it's mainly individuals who are accredited investors, angels. They're current entrepreneurs. They're exited entrepreneurs. They're, they come in all, you know, all walks of life, which is great. Our group is really starting to get diverse now. There's about 35 of us. We co-founded it in 2009 while I was running the email marketing company Blue Sky, and just sort of like, I've never really been a stock market guy, and I was like, I really think that, like, you know, there's a lot of cool innovation. I was kind of also feeling like the drift away from being a startup at running Blue Sky, and I wanted to get back to those roots. And so the group is formed. Dave Troy, another entrepreneur in town, along with a bunch of others, and myself kind of got it going. Dave had sold his company, ToadNet, which was an ISP, and kind of was able to carry the load for a while. I was running Blue Sky, and then Dave started 410 Labs, and I sold Blue Sky. And then our roles flipped, and the group kind of started slowing down, not meeting. And so I resurrected it when I had, in the fall of 2011, along with another great colleague, Ed Chalfin. And we just started getting it going, and we made it into a membership organization, and we started doing deals. And we just crossed the 2 million mark of invested capital in early stage companies, most of which are right here in Baltimore, which we're really happy about and proud about. And we don't have any big successes to point to yet, mm-hmm. but it's still early. You know, the group is, you know.
But our listeners would be interested in hearing about the types of startups you're talking about. You don't have to give us names if you don't want to, but I think people would be interested in knowing what's going on there.
Yeah, I mean, this area right now is, you know, as you mentioned earlier, I want to see Baltimore be a hotbed of, you know, technology innovation. This area right now is booming, and it is building momentum, particularly in a few areas. Obviously, cybersecurity is a big area. Advertising technology, and there's a huge, I mean, even the BBJ just did a big article about the fallout from the Ferber brothers. You know, they created advertising.com. Now you've got this entire ecosystem of advertising technology companies coming out. Education technology, huge. And now health technology is real big. And we've seen that just with the entrance of the Dream It Health Accelerator that my colleague Jason Hardebeck runs over. It's affiliated with Hopkins. It's over at the Bond Street Wharf.
Right, right. We've covered it a little bit here on the show.
You know, so like that stuff was just, you know, none of that stuff was happening.
More from Greg on this when we get back. We have to take another break, Greg. We'll come back and continue our conversation in just a moment. You're welcome to join us with Greg Cangelosi, 410-662-8780. This is Midday. Greg Cangelosi with us, now CEO of Mission Ticks, but you are doing a you are doing a bunch of things. We mentioned the Baltimore Angels. You started to describe that for us. And yep. So to wrap that one up.
Yeah, no problem.
Generally, the startups that you've seen through this the last 5 years and about $2 million of investing, mm-hmm. right? Advertising, ed tech, yep. and now more from health tech,
yep.
which makes sense for Baltimore.
And cybersecurity. I mean,
cybersecurity.
You know, if Zero Fox was a great deal that we just did last year. Health tech, Reify Health, which also spun out a new company in ed tech called Signalvine, Allaview, which is a prominent ed tech company that we just invested in.
I have a question about the people who come to see you with these ideas.
Sure.
Right? These ideas, I assume, have moved beyond, me and my brother were sitting around the kitchen table and we got this wicked good idea and we want to talk to you about it. It's moved beyond that.
We have
right?
protocol and process. I mean, you know, the hardest thing, but we want the experience for the entrepreneur, no matter what stage, to be positive with the group. You know, it's something we've worked really hard to do. And I have a great team. Sean McElroy is our operation manager. He really takes care of the day-to-day logistics and making sure everybody gets a touch point. So listen, the answer is no, like 99.9% of the time. And it's for a variety of reasons. They're just not at a certain stage. Our group in particular likes to have a company that is sort of the product's built, prototyped, at the very least, ideally validated in the market. If they're generating revenue, even better. But we like to see problem, solution, traction, right? So there's this whole saying in angel investing, you know, that traction is the new due diligence, right? You got to do your due diligence on a company you're going to invest in, but traction and how far they've gone and how many users they have and how many customers they have and how much revenue they've generated in what amount of time and what are they really going to do with the use of funds that we give them and having that very clarified.
Do you mind giving an example of that? That you've seen already? If you don't want to give us the name of the company, I just would, you know, what are they doing? What did they propose? And what did you see that made you say, hey, this looks promising?
Well, I mean, so I'll tell you what, here, the first company that walked into the doors of Betamore was Zero Fox. You know, these guys came in, it was two of them, they cranked out. And this is kind of the beauty of like a place like Betamore, the serendipity of what happens. I got introduced to a gentleman, spacing out his name, but he runs Genicast Ventures, which is an offshoot of Comcast Ventures out of Philly, and they're looking for deals down here. Guy comes through, meets with me. I start walking him around, introducing him to the CEOs. James Foster, the CEO of Zero Fox, was in the room. I introduced them. Turns out Genicast wound up leading their round. It was a $2 million round, I think probably a little bit more. And that was a perfect time to also bring them right into the Baltimore Angels. Foster came in, pitched the group, and the group.
Excuse me. What did they want to do, Greg?
Oh, they want to build a product. They want to build a product. Oh, it's a social media. It's a cybersecurity for social media. So there's just, you know, we're being compromised on so many levels at the from different types of threats and known hacks, and they have a massive database that they've been building of verified known threats, and they have a cool product called FriendGuard that is on the consumer level that protects consumers from these attacks.
And Twitter or Facebook, wherever you are.
Yeah, and you know what? I didn't realize how many different social networks there were until Foster had a slide on his pitch deck that was just like, mind melting.
Okay, so they got together. So the
Genicast Ventures came in, led the round. Baltimore Angels came in. We all, we kind of do co-investing or syndicate, it's called. You know, two or three groups together are kind of filling around.
So importantly, that both those entities had already had this traction that you're talking about.
I think the way it went down from my perception is, you know, these guys have a great idea. On the consumer level, cybersecurity is absolutely, you know, paramount. On the enterprise level, even more paramount. Social media is bubbling, proliferating everywhere. There's no doubt that it's not going away. These guys are exited entrepreneurs. Foster's done it, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 times before. Great success track record. That's a whole different type of investment, right? Like, you're betting on people at this stage, right? Mm-hmm. And so when you're betting on somebody who's done it 2 or 3 or 4 times, it's a little bit, you know what I mean?
Versus less risk.
Versus right. a first-time entrepreneur.
Right.
Which are
you.
Much more definite. And so now you're like, are you coachable? Are you going to take advice? You know, can we help? Are you going to take our, you know, that kind of thing. So there's different levels.
Greg Cangelosi is our guest here. And Greg, you've mentioned Betamore a couple of times just in passing here. I mentioned it at the outset, but we should go in a little more detail for our listeners who aren't totally hip on what that is. It's in Federal Hill. It's on Light Street, right? It's in a building on Light Street. This is, would you call this an urban tech campus, a startup campus? Is where you can go and get some help?
Yeah, we call it it's a campus for entrepreneurship with, you know, emphasis on technology, AKA otherwise known as an incubator. But ours is different. The main thing, we focus on three things, you know, community, incubation, and the differentiator really is education. We actually have something called Betamore Academy where we teach skill sets that are kind of filling the gap between where the colleges and universities leave off and what employers need today to stay innovative and to stay ahead on the technology side. So we developed, for example, a front-end web development course that encompasses user interface design, design skills, front-end programming for the web. And then we have another one that's called back-end web development, which is more on the database side and Ruby on Rails and different programming languages there. These classes are long form, though. They're 10 to 12 weeks. They're intensive. They're 3 hours per class, twice a week.
Who's taking them? Who are
the really
students?
It's really cool, and I'm glad you asked that because we're just in our second session, right? And so these aren't like – we're not doing hundreds of students, you know. We are doing, you know, roughly 23 to 25 people per session. And what's great about this is this current session, over 50% of the people that came in were sent by their employers. So it's professional development. The other 50% are people who are looking to make a career change or just looking to sharpen or enhance their skills. So those are our long-form classes. On the flip side, we do short-form classes, which could be one night, 2 nights, intensive, 2-3 hour, or maybe a broad brush overview, marketing, social media. We have one coming up on social media real soon. And it's open to everybody. It's open enrollment, you know. Obviously, the other side of Betamore is a membership model. We have a community membership, and then we have a dedicated membership. So a dedicated membership, you can come in 24/7, grind, you know, burn the midnight oil. You get your own desk. On the community membership, you kind of, you know, co-work. You familiar with the concept? You know, you come in, work at the table, mingle with your colleagues. It's really cool to see the connections that are formed, the relationships, and also the business that's generated just from, again, being in the room.
The people who come in there have some ideas about what they want to develop.
Yeah, they do. And if they don't,
some there are there for a refresher or for a second career. But some have some idea about something they want to develop when they arrive.
Yeah, most people do, or if not, they get clarity on what they want to do just by working out of the space and the connections that they made. It's also not uncommon for one of the startups who may be in the back to hire one of the community members because they've connected,
right,
you know, and it
right.
makes sense.
And you said there actually is a trail now between Betamore and the Angels, the Baltimore Angels?
Yeah, the Baltimore Angels does all its pre-screening at Betamore. So before we actually do a monthly meeting in front of the full group, we make a small subset of the group. Usually 3 to 5 of our angels will go in and we'll screen anywhere from 10 to 20 companies at Betamore, giving them a 5-minute pitch each, doing some Q&A, and then putting together our final meeting.
This is so interesting. So the folks who are thinking startup, right? Uh-huh. They're thinking, I want to start up. I have the entrepreneurial instinct. I have some experience in what, software development. I've worked for a web development company.
You have the technical founder and the non-technical founder.
Right.
You know,
are there people who are sort of coming in from the cold? And by that I mean, have no background in software, in computers, in the internet, any of it, right? But have a great idea that needs an application, that needs. Yeah,
we do see a lot of that.
Yeah, we do. Do you see a lot of that?
Yeah, we see a lot of that. I see a lot of that. Some of that doesn't, you know, obviously doesn't make it to the angel group because the group, it's all about the team. You know, you're investing, like I said earlier, you're investing in people at this stage. Particularly, mm-hmm. It's a very high risk, you know, asset class, angel investing. So it's like, you know, it really only matters. And we talk about ideas, and you know, this needs an app, and that needs an app. And we're only talking about ideas. You know, the real sort of meat on the bone is your ability to execute the idea. That's really the only thing that matters. Do you have a team? Do you have a vision? And do you have a product and a vision and a team that can execute that?
And also, there's this to me, just looking at when I look at the internet and all that's out there, it seems like it can be a bit overwhelming mm-hmm. for people, right? You have so many choices, so many, well, apps alone. There's so many choices. So how do you, on the other side of it, distinguish yourself out there? You know, how do you get the traction you're talking about? Well, that's tough.
Yeah, it's tough. It's real. I mean, it's a lot easier said than done. That's for sure. But you know, you honestly, you have to obviously strike a chord. Depending on whether you're a B2B company or a B2C company, consumers are much harder because you got to get to critical mass, you know, much quicker. Versus, you know, B2B, you could get a couple good contracts to get you going, kind of prove and pilot. But yeah, differentiation and innovation is hard to master. And definitely hard to execute on. But the companies that bubble to the top, it's because they're doing that.
You mentioned that you had a mentor earlier. I don't use his name,
yeah.
But it was back in the 90s, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know how important that is.
Yeah.
So do the Baltimore Angels sort of work as mentors too, even though you're putting up money, right?
Yeah, we do. I mean, we do. You know, there's different types of relationships with the Angels and the investments that we do. So some of the investments that we do, you know, it's very much like I don't want to say we're not hands on for sure. So I want to just make sure that's established. We're not going to get involved in the business. But if you're an investor in a company, you know, part of the value is, and a big part of the value is the network that comes with that investment. You know what I mean? So we think of ourselves as an investment. So even if there's people in the group that haven't made an investment in a company, because we're not a fund, right? We all invest individually. You want to use the leverage of that entire network of the whole group to make an introduction, to introduce a portfolio company to a contact. The smartest entrepreneurs will reach out to their investors and tell them what they need, and they'll communicate effectively with their investors on a regular basis. I love the ones that send a monthly update, but a quarterly update is just fine, you know. Gives everybody insight, and the best entrepreneurs out there are the ones that say, here's what I need from you. And they break it out.
They know what they need.
And they say, you know, and they're talking to a group of people that have put money behind them and are all aligned with success.
As we walk around Baltimore and just live in the city and see what's going on and hear about different things, it's not always clear to me what's going on in those buildings.
Yeah.
When it comes to this. So, like your building, the Betamore building down there and over in Canton, and someone will tell me about a job that he has working for a company I never heard of that's a dot something, you know.
Yeah.
It's great. I mean, it's great. I'm glad it's happening.
Yeah.
But I don't really have this insight. I don't really feel like I'm plugged into to all of that. So I wonder if
you're not the only one.
I'm not the only one, but I wish you'd just sort of, and I read the Baltimore Business Journal, I read the Daily Record, my own newspaper. From time to time, we'll have a story about somebody rolling out something good happening, some acquisition, some IPO somewhere.
Yep.
But, you know, it's going on constantly, right?
Constantly,
Can you just scope it out for us a little bit more, this landscape? I mean, you talked about ed tech and emerging health tech,
now. You know, we have these sectors that are sort of booming, health tech, DreamIt being a great example of, you know, Hopkins kind of, you know, doing a deal with DreamIt Ventures, DreamIt Health out of Philly, coming down here, running their very successful accelerator program for innovation around healthcare technology. That model is an accelerator model, which is where they come in, they give the entities like $50,000, take a small piece of equity. And, you know, I just went in and did some office hours for them last week, met with all the different teams,
mm-hmm.
kind of like for me to do an initial take, because these are the companies that are probably going to pitch the Baltimore Angels in the next, you know, few months.
So right? What did they want from you? Whether they were
feedback. What do you think? Poke some questions. Hey, have you ever thought about? Do you want an introduction to that kind of stuff? Right, and so that's where the mentorship comes in. And also for us, you know, we're always looking for deal flow for the Angel Group. So, and that's part of my job is going out there and see what the next generation is, or the next you know sort of crop of companies that are going to take off. Betamore, same thing. It's great. We have tons of startups working out of there of all different types, everything from health. Uber's out of there.
You know, another thing that's interesting about what you're doing and how you're speaking here and talking about others, although you are involved with the Angels and you're putting up some money, hoping to make some money, mm-hmm. right?
Sure.
There seems to be this collaborative culture in Baltimore, or in this particular realm of of industry. It wasn't there in previous generations,
no.
I don't think.
Everyone's talked about silos, you know what I mean? And those silos, I think, are, you know, it's a little fragmented right now, but still, but like, I'm a co-founder of Betamore, but I'm a mentor in the Accelerate Baltimore program in the Emerging Technology Center over in Highland Town. I just went in and did Dream It office hours for the Accelerator program there. I'm very active with UMBC, my alma mater. In fact, on April 24th, we have made a gift to the Alex Brown Entrepreneurship Center, and we have the Cangelosi Business Innovation Competition, a.k.a. the CBIC. We have 9 finalists. We have an awesome lineup of judges.
Really? Is this the first year?
This is the first inaugural one. It's a startup all in of itself. And, you know, the idea behind this competition is, unlike business plan competitions, it's to really, truly pull the real entrepreneurs who are in school, doing their undergraduate or graduate, to give them a pathway to really flesh out their ideas, develop them, get mentored while they're doing this. The 24th, they get pitched. The prizes are awesome. It's real cash, $5,000 for the first company, for the first place, and down from there. They get a membership at Betamore. They get more mentorship beyond that. We want these students to be connected to what's beyond college right here in Baltimore, so that when they graduate, we don't do talent export. You know, we do talent retention, which is a big thing. And we're starting to see that.
You're starting to see that? Because that's been a wrap on the city for a long time. Yeah. And when the kids get college educated and they move somewhere else, right?
Yeah, they roll right out. Yeah. And we don't want that, you know, especially the ones that want to start businesses. When I say, hey, look, there's early stage capital here. Yeah. There's really great places to work. There's awesome mentors. There's entrepreneurs who've been there and done that have reinvested in the community and try to make it a better place. I feel very passionate about that.
And do you feel like we have enough of our population educated sufficiently for these jobs?
Which jobs?
For startups. Well, just the whole field, you know, of ed tech, health tech.
I do think there is a big surge. I don't know if it's about necessarily education. It's definitely more about awareness and seeing that, you know, and identifying opportunities. I mean, the best ideas come from people who are working in these industries who go, wow, this is so broken. Like, this is such a problem.
Right,
like,
let's fix this.
Let's fix this, you know? Like Jess Gartner with Allevue. Like, she, you know, she worked in the education system, and she, you know, she's building this platform that allows school systems to, you know, do more accurate financial accountability and planning and forecasting. Through her experience of realizing that, why isn't there paper in the classroom? And wait, we're not going to get any more? You know, things like at that level.
That seems like a classic case of the entrepreneur who discovers a problem and says, I'm going to fix this somehow using new modern technology.
And is inspired to do it and, you know, has the drive.
How many of those do you see? Is that a common thing?
It's become, it is. It is common. And, you know, it comes from, like I said, all shapes and sizes. But, yeah, some of the best ideas are the ones that come right from the people working in the industry that are going to leave the industry, become entrepreneurs to go after something passionately.
Greg, I think it's great that you're in a position where you can foster this. You know, you've already accomplished a lot in your life. You're only 40 years old. And now you're not sitting back, but you're being very active in cultivating this technological scene in Baltimore, inspiring other innovators and entrepreneurs.
I'm trying.
It's great. I mean, it's great to be able to do that. And you have colleagues who do the same thing with you, all these angels.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah, this is, you know, at the very least, not about me, but there's a lot of great people in town working towards making this, not only the city, but this region, you know, stand out and be attractive to, you know, folks to stay here when they go to school, for folks who want to go out and start businesses. And with the best stuff that I'm really starting to see now is, like, we're sort of like spending time on getting companies to move here, and not the big enterprise ones, the small startups who are the future, and they're going to be the future of the jobs in the city.
Great. It's been great talking with you, Greg Cangelosi. Thank you very much.
Dan, great to be here. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Greg Cangelosi will be speaking at the Startup Grind. I have to close out here.
Midday's senior producer is Nikki Gamer. The producer and director is Jonathan Ahrens. The associate producer, Michael Himowitz. Our interns are Luke Spicknell, James Daly, Tom Cartaxo, and Michelle Richardson. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming available at WYPR.org. Dan Roderick's column appears in the Baltimore Sun. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.
Bye.